June 15th through the 19th, 2001. Jackson Ayers, the lawyer Erno had hired for his nephew, Collins, was difficult. Privately, he was apt to refer to his clients as thugs, but he thought even less of cops and prosecutors. The only thing he liked about them was the competition. For Ayers, there really was a single issue in the law anyway: race. Everything in his world came down to white versus black. A few years ago, during a trial, he had referred to Muriel in front of the jury as the slave master. She could not say the outburst had worsened their relationship. It had always been terrible. Jackson sat in Muriel's office, listening to her pitch, with his slender fingers steepled. Jackson was well past 70 now, but spry and lean and still at the top of his game. Like all defense lawyers, he was unaccustomed to holding an advantage, and when he had one, as he did now, he was completely insufferable. Tommy Molto, dark and disheveled, sat beside Jackson, on the other side of Muriel's huge desk, making no effort to hide his dyspeptic reactions as Ayers carried on. "Immunity," Ayers answered when Muriel told him they wanted a word with Collins. "Immunity?" Muriel asked. "Why does he need immunity? The statute of limitations ran out a long time ago, even if he did lie to us in 1991.
"Why? It's between him and me, Muriel. But my man's not talking to Arthur or to you without full protection under the law, and if you want to depose him, you got to go to him."
"Maybe we'll do that," said Muriel. "Maybe we can ride the same plane down for the deposition. I'll send you a notice."
"You think I don't know a damn bluff when I see one? Muriel, that license on my wall is so old that the sheep they made it from rode on the ark with Noah."
"Did you know that?"
"I am too old to bluff, Muriel."
Molto walked Jackson out. She talked a moment with Tommy when he returned, then left a message for Larry. A little after 5, he arrived on her threshold, rapping politely on the open door. "Busy? Never for you, Larry." In the large reception area outside her door, the assistants were all gone for the day, and the phones, routed to voicemail, had fallen silent. Someone listening in now or in the witness room the other day might say she was flirting. Force of habit, she supposed. She recounted her meeting with Jackson. Larry couldn't understand why Collins would demand immunity. "Probably," said Muriel, "because he knows I won't give it to him. My guess is that Collins and his uncle aren't on the same page. By taking 5, he stays out of the middle, which is why we're making a trip to Atlanta."
"We are?"
"Yes, we are. I'm going to get a subpoena, and you're going to serve Collins as soon as it's issued." On Tuesday morning, Larry was at the gate at the Tri-Cities airport, looking distraught when she dashed up. For Muriel, making planes, like so many other things in her life, was a contest. If the gate agent wasn't swinging the door closed when she arrived, she felt she'd wasted irretrievable minutes. "How the hell can you stand that?" Larry wanted to know as they struggled to their seats.
"Flying's bad enough as it is."
They each had brought an overnight bag, but the baggage compartments were full. "Sorry, Larry, I still hadn't connected with Claire, Tomage's daughter. I was supposed to have our grandson tonight. Hope you take it as a compliment, but when I hear over the river and through the woods, it's not your face in the picture."
"I'm good, Larry. This is the best chance I'll get, and I'm taking it."
Even talking about that little boy, she felt some of the delirium and longing that often accompanied his presence and his absence. Her face apparently betrayed that.
"Adopt?" asked Larry.
"Huh?
Did you think of that?"
"Oh," she paused to girdle her heart. "We nearly adopted a boy about 3 years ago. African-American, crack mom, the whole deal. And it fell apart. Just about killed me. But you know the saying, maybe it's for the best. Neither of Talmadge's daughters give him better than a C as a father. Even so, every now and then I think about one more try. Talmadge is reluctant. It's not a lot of enthusiasm. The way he travels, I'd pretty much be flying solo. It's complicated. Sometimes when you chat about old Talmadge, it reminds me of the way you used to talk about, what's his name?"
"What's his name?"
your husband of blessed memory.
Rod? She actually laughed, loud enough that in spite of the engine's thrum, she could see a passenger stir across the row. There was no comparison. Talmadge was a behemoth, a local institution. Rod was a sot.
Thank you for sharing, Larry, she said, and opened another file.
But the conversation wasn't done for her, because she suddenly remembered how she'd seen Rod when she chased him. Luminous and engaging, surely not a wreck crushed against the rocks in his cocktail glass. So for a second, she followed Larry's thought and colored in the numbers. Both older, distracted, both her teachers, both stars in her firmament, and both with a grandness about themselves that instinct might have told her, camouflaged cavernous self-doubts. A freezing draft blew over her heart. What did all that mean? Everything? Nothing. She was 44 years old, and it made her deal, made her life. The philosopher beside her had told her the fundamental truth weeks ago. Life wasn't perfect. She stretched against the confines of the airplane seat and, by habit, stashed these thoughts to again return to work.